Paula K. from the Need a Miracle Group of NA in the North Pittsburgh area of NA.
How much time should we speak?
25 minutes.
Will you let me know when it's close?
Yeah.
It's empty.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name's Paula.
Hey, Paula.
Wow. Just let me say, it's always an honor to be asked to speak at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and being asked to speak at a retreat is really important to me. It really means a lot. When I first came around, it was kind of even before I was clean. I had been taken to a retreat, and I was really overwhelmed. But it was a really small retreat up in Ohio, but I was very overwhelmed, and it was like, whoa, this stuff is pretty cool, you know? Took me a little bit of time to get clean again, but I guess women's rap. We're just talking about women's stuff, right? I don't know. Let me recenter myself. Okay. Let me tell you a little bit about how I got here. What it was like, how I got here, and what it's like today. When in doubt, go back to the basics, right? So, I used a long time. I used different drugs, different things, different places, different men, different everything. I tried a little bit of everything because it was that man, it was that drink, it was that type of drug, and that kept me using for a pretty long time, and it finally got to the point that it was really no doubt that it really wasn't which drug it was. I mean, I know that now. I didn't quite know that then, but I was pretty desperate, and I was hurting pretty bad, and at the end of my road, I was loaded with guilt and shame, and I had 4 children, one of who didn't want to live with me anymore. I had 3 little kids that I drugged through my, or well, 4 kids that I drugged through my addiction, but 3 that were left with me, and for some reason they stayed with me. I don't know what that's about, and it doesn't matter, they did. At the end of the road, me and my kids and their dad lived in a shooting gallery. We lived in an attic with a mattress on the floor, and I used to say, oh, I live at my friend Bill's house. No, because he really wasn't a friend. Anytime I think that, it wasn't quite that bad, I wasn't that bad, I have to remember that. And normal people don't live in shooting galleries with their children. I just wanted to die. I'd gotten to that place. I had done a whole lot of stuff. We tried moving, we tried this, we tried that, we tried everything. None of that worked. Go figure, right? Like when we moved down south and we took us with us, and I was married. I was with the guy at the time, so it was bad. It was awful. It was horrible. The guilt and the shame ate me up every day. And I really did. I just wanted to die. I didn't see any way out. I didn't see any way to be, go back to living some semblance of a normal life. And I really didn't believe that was possible. So, like we do sometimes, like I do sometimes, we had a friend at our house, and he was telling me all about this recovery program, right? This rehab he went to. We're getting high, mind you. And I thought, well, that's a good idea, right? And I guess it was. So I went to rehab, and it was really bad. And I mean, the rehab was good, but the home life never changed. And I came home with some young dude from rehab, and we had a party. And that's crazy. That's insane. It made so much sense to me then. And So kept using and kept using and kept using. And I remember one day just like being in that, we had been tossed out of apartments and, you know, moving around. We were stealing and just doing anything that you had to do to get high. I really was willing to do anything to get high. What ended up happening is another friend told me about the methadone clinic that was down on Beaver Avenue. PBA, the second step was the name of it. And you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. And I thought, well, okay, that's probably a good idea, because I had so many good ideas. And I remember going there, and honestly and truly, that was the path for me. I only have my story to tell you, and that's what I have. And I went there, and I still couldn't stay clean. You know, I was doing all this other drugs and da-da-da-da-da, and things got a little bit better because I wasn't living in the shooting gallery anymore. But anyway, I did that, and I ended up down there, and I ended up meeting some people there that were in the program, and they were counselors and what have you there. And I remember her telling me about going to Narcotics Anonymous, and I had went to there on the buggy from rehab. You know, I read the whole book. Probably wasn't going to work for me because I'm different. And so I went, because I did hear one thing about total abstinence and all that stuff, and I went anyway, because I was pretty desperate. I was just was out of my mind. I had nowhere to go, nothing to do. I could not work. I was unemployable. So I ended up, going to some meetings, and I live in Pittsburgh, and I lived there, and I could walk to meetings, and I'm so grateful for that, because I didn't have a car, I didn't have a license, I didn't have none of that shit. So I was able to walk to these meetings, and at the time, the woman who was working at this place told me to go ahead and pick up a key tag, right? And I thought, okay. And honestly, at that point, I had gotten to a place in my life that I wasn't using anything else other than this medication and yada yada. This is a long time ago. So I ended up getting key tags there. And like I said, I can share with you my story, because it, you know, that's how I got here. So I did that, and I heard something. I heard you all say something. I didn't think I could get this. I really didn't think this. I saw it working for you. I believed it could work, but I really just didn't think it was going to work for me, because I was that broken and that broken, because I was different, you know. And that's what I found out at some point along the way about self-centeredness, because I didn't buy that. What do you mean I'm self-centered? I'm a piece of shit. Don't you understand that? How self-centeredness to me was thinking you're real great. No, self-centered is when I walked in a room and thought, well, everybody's looking at me and thinking, what a piece of shit she is. That was self-centeredness as well. So anyway, I did that, and I got key tags, and look, my life started to change. My life started to change, and I felt not quite a part of, but at least it was better than where I was, right? And I did that, and I had these beautiful people placed in my life that didn't judge me, didn't tell me I couldn't stay here, because that's what I thought was going to happen, and they didn't do that. So, you know, I would go to meetings, and I'd take my kids with me, and I still went to this little program down there, and I did that for about a year. And see, this is how I started noticing, like, the miracles that were happening in my life. First of all, I was still alive, and second of all, I was at a meeting, and I was getting ready to go into another place to get off the shit. And at that time, I had ended up meeting a woman who was doing the same thing that I was doing. I had never met her before. She was going to that same place the same time I was. There ain't no coincidences in my life. I'm very aware of that. And I'm always glad she was there, because she was just a little crazier than me. You know, she hooked up with some guy in there, and I was like, oh, shit. So I went there, and I was supposed to take this medication that they had at the time. I don't know if they still have it or not, and it doesn't matter. But along the way, I contracted hepatitis C, and I went in there and I had all these plans, and the doctor came in and told me, she said, you know, you can't do that because, you know, you have liver damage and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, what am I supposed to do? Because I had this plan. You know, when we make plans and, you know, it doesn't go our way because it's not really supposed to anyway. And she looked at me and her name was Dr. Pringle, and I'll never forget her, but she handed me a prayer card. And it was a St. Jude, which is the patron saint of hopeless causes or some shit. I was like, okay, yeah, that's my story. My higher power has a sense of humor, man. And I'm so grateful, because I was like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Anyway, I ended up keeping on trying to do this. I went home. I felt like crap. I didn't know to come to meetings. You taught me that, because when I was coming here, I learned to go to meetings. I learned that if I keep coming to meetings, that maybe something will change in my life. So I did that. I used when I got home, and it was a month or so of using and not using and using and not using, and going to meetings and getting key tags and getting key tags. And my sponsor at the time kept telling me, just go get another one, go get another one, go get another one. I was like, Jesus God, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I did get the last white key tag I picked up was at the convention in downtown Pittsburgh. And she said, go up there and get it, girl, because, you know, you got to do this. And I had to walk in front of everybody. And, of course, everybody was staring at me, right? Not really. Self-centeredness, right? And that was October 27th of 1995. And I have not found it necessary to use anything since then. And I'm so freaking grateful. I'm so grateful. Because I was able to, I told you, a lot of guilt and a lot of shame. And sometimes today I still struggle with that a little bit, but not as bad as I used to. And I'll tell you why. Because you all loved me, first of all. And I loved you, and I trusted you. And if you loved me, then there must be something there. The second part was, I worked some steps. And I really didn't see how they were working in my life, Eddie, as each step, and I was working it, and thought, I really thought I was like, this is fraudulent. I don't feel like I'm doing anything. I'm writing some shit on paper. I'm talking to you about it. I don't know. Hindsight tells me different. Hindsight tells me that the miracles we are walking and talking and not getting high, when the only thing I really want to do is change the way I feel. And let me tell you, I've tried different ways to do that clean. You know, food. I went back to school for a long time. I just kept going back to school. That's a good thing, right? Yeah, it's a good thing, but, you know, hey. Eventually, after many years, I had to, you know, I came to meetings. I got a service position. That's the other thing that you all told me. You told me, get a position, do something, do some service for somebody else. I didn't think I could do that. I didn't think I had anything to give. But I did learn. I learned. I was a secretary of the first home group, one of the first home groups. I had five. More is better. I had nothing else to do at the time. And I was a secretary. That was even before I got clean. That's my story. But they didn't have anybody else. There was three of us. They said open the door. Nobody else would, so I did. But I learned that service work is my path as well. I've learned now, after a little bit of time, that I can do service work elsewhere other than just here, too. But this is where I learned how to do it. This is where I learned how to show up again. This is where I used for a long time. I used for, I don't know, 20-odd years. And I forgot all that stuff. You guys taught me how to show up, how to be a good human being, how to be a good mother. You know, sometimes I look at my kids and I think, how the fuck did you guys turn out so good? I drugged them through a horrible addiction, man. They were living in a shooting gallery. My second daughter was 12 when I got clean. They're out there, like, changing the world, man. Literally, they are. And but you know where I learned how to do that? I learned how to do that here. You helped me do that. It's crazy. No, it's not crazy. I take that back. that's what happens here. That's the miracle that happens here. You know, I went back, like I said, I went back to school and I got a degree and then I got another degree and then I got a job and kept the same job for a long time. Well, not really the same job. It was in the same facility, same company, whatever. I worked in a treatment program and I still do, but I remember I was at a meeting and somebody came, "Hey, you want a job?" And I thought, "Well, yeah, I want a job." So I got a job working in a treatment program, right? And I learned there, too, about service work and about showing up. When I didn't feel like going to work, I was unemployable. I couldn't work. Because I either took your money or didn't show up. Somehow or another, I robbed you, whether of the time or whatever. And I became employable. And I showed up for work when I was supposed to. Wow. I showed up for my kids when I was supposed to. You know, I went to their school. Look, when I was using, I would go to their school thinking I was doing something good. And then when I got clean, I thought, why didn't somebody call somebody on me? I was nodding off in the freaking, like, in the school. I remember nodding off at a doctor's appointment with my kids. Like, really, why didn't somebody call somebody on me? But I guess that just wasn't the way it was supposed to be. That's what I've learned. I've learned that things happen just as they're supposed to happen. I have a couple little stories about, like, no coincidences and stuff. And I had a real hard time with the whole God concept. I really did. I just didn't want to hear about God. And it didn't make sense to me. I just didn't get it. And I remember talking to my sponsor when I had less than a year clean, and at that time I'm still living with my ex-husband who was using, and you know what? She never once said, "You need to leave him. Stop it." She said, "Okay, we'll love you until you can love yourself, and when the pain gets great enough, you'll do what you got to do." I'm so grateful for those women. Because honestly, back, well, maybe now too, but especially then, if you would have said, "You gotta leave," I would have said, "F you, I'm not doing shit." And she did. She just loved me until I could, like, get my shit together. But anyway, I remember one day thinking, I was talking about God and all this shit, and I didn't understand it, and I, like, what am I talking to her about? How am I gonna know what God is? How am I gonna know about that crap? What am I gonna do, see burning bushes? Well, about an hour later, I look out my window and there's these fire trucks outside. I'm not kidding. I lived in the hood too, the mommy. But the kids set the hedges on fire with the hairspray can, right? Not just the fire though. We had the fire trucks. You know what I mean? My higher power says, "Oh my God, don't you get it?" I was like, "Okay, burning bushes. All right." Yeah. I mean, I still didn't know about my whole concept of God, but what that told me is there's something else out there greater than me. Sometimes it's you all. Over the course of some years, and, you know, I raised my kids. You helped me do that. They went out into the world. Went back to school a lot, got a degree, started working, and started using work, basically, is what I was doing. I was working 16, 17 hours a day in this treatment facility because I'm important, right? Miserable. Still going to meetings. I mean, I still went to meetings. That's the one thing I never stopped doing. I went to meetings. Look, for the first 3 years I was clean, I went to a meeting every single day. I was terrified not to. I was so scared not to go to a meeting. I remember once I had the flu, the straight up flu, and it's like, "I gotta go to a meeting." And my sponsor's like, "Please stay home." Like, really, stay home. But so I kept coming and I kept coming and I kept coming, and I learned to to keep putting one foot in front of the other no matter what happened. I ended up having to have treatment for hepatitis C, and it wasn't the pretty one that's there now. If you're on it, I'm sorry, but it was really pretty now compared to what it was. It was a year and a half treatment, and it was having to draw this shit up into a syringe, and they sent me home with this, and I was like, "Oh my God." Through that, through school, through the ex leaving, through my oldest daughter's using. I'm not sure if she's clean now or not, but she's doing better. But through marriage, I got married again, and we bought a house, and I remember that we were in the process of buying this house. I never did that before. I didn't know what that was about. And I remember calling him up one day and saying, God dang, I hope they do this soon before they find out who we are and say, are you crazy? But you know what? We paid the bills too. How about that? I never did that. But anyway, it's just so simple now for me. I show up. I give something somewhere, someplace, whatever that may be, that changes. I offer some love because that was what was given to me. You all loved me. When I felt extraordinarily unlovable. So I still do some days now, but that's okay because I know how to get to the other side of that. So I'm at this job and I'm miserable and I'm like, I got to do something. And I did. Some major shifts in my life happened. This is a couple years back, and I left. I was in the marriage I was in was just stagnant, and we were there for financial reasons, and it was miserable. So I moved, and my daughter was living in the South, and I moved there. I would go visit her and say, I want to live here. This is really nice. And she'd send me these job opportunities. So I went and I applied for a job, and they hired me, right? So I moved there. Put all my shit in a van and I moved there, and it happened almost effortlessly. I lived there for about 2 years and then found myself in the same freaking spot, man, working all these hours every day, miserable. I'm thinking, I really like it here, you know, the water and the beautiful sunsets that I looked at through my freaking office window. Who cared? So I remember somebody telling me, well, pray and ask God to reveal to you in a way you can understand, like, what you're supposed to do. Because I didn't know what to do. Do I quit this job? Do I stay? Da-da-da. About less than a week later, I got fired. I did. I got fired. And if there was this... First, I was very indignant. Oop, you can't fire me. But there was this little voice in my head that said, thank you. Thank you. And here's what I learned here, though. Here's where I learned to have some grace, to carry myself with some grace and dignity. The guy that fired me looks at me and goes, well, you could come back later and get your things, you know, when nobody's here. It's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take my stuff, I'm going to pack it up, and I'm going to leave now. And I did. And that was really hard, but I did that. I ended up back here because you all came and got me. And I came home for a visit and applied for a job and got hired on the spot. Because I applied for jobs down there, and over and over and over again, still trying to do my will, right? Couldn't find a job to save my life. So I ended up back here. I've gone through this transition in my life that, you know, the depth of the love I feel in my life is just gotten so much deeper, and feeling like such a deeper connection with my higher power. And I don't know, I might sound like I'm out of my mind, but it's almost tingly sometimes, man. It's crazy. I feel like I'm back to square one almost some days. I'm frightened, I'm scared, but it's just a new adventure, and it's a new place. It's a new way to start a new path. I've morphed and changed and like kind of broken wide open. I haven't said that since I got back a year ago. Well, I haven't said it in a while. And that's how it felt. I felt like I got busted open. And that's where I'm at. And I had to sit still and go through some really awful, in my head, terrifying moments. But the love I've been given just blows my mind. You know, I didn't sponsor anybody for a long time either. I came back here. I had 5 sponsees. Like, okay. And all of them, like, were people with, women with time. Women with, like really wanting to, like, work steps and stuff like that. It's just amazing. Just recently, a couple months ago, I had to have surgery, and I remember telling the doctor, I got stuff to do. I don't have time for this. I really don't have time for this. And I meant it. I was dead serious. I said, you know, I'm good. I went to the doctors because they got new insurance. I'm good. Well, major surgery later, I ended up with having to have a total hysterectomy, and of course it has to be the big one. They can't do it like laparoscopy. It had to be this straight up and down, and like pfft. I kept telling her, I do not have time for this. But I did, and I was able to talk to them about, you know, pain management, and it was pretty awesome, actually. It was really awesome because I was terrified, man. I was really scared, and I was able to talk to them about some pain management, and they gave me a whole pain team. It's pretty awesome. I don't know that they had anybody recently that wanted to, like, manage pain other than giving you a morphine pump, because that's what that one person kept saying. Well, we'll just give you a pump. I'm like, no, you don't get it. You don't understand. It can't be a pump. And if I would have needed it, I would have done that. But I didn't. And very minimal narcotics when I was in there, of course. It's funny, my sister was there with me, and they gave me some really good stuff. And right before surgery, and I was just like, and I looked at my sister, I said, this is why I got high. And she was like, what? She didn't get it. I thought it was rather funny at the time. But 3 days later, they sent me home, and I was a little frightened and a little scared, but they sent me home with no narcotics, and that was okay. It worked. There was a backup, because I wasn't going to be stupid. I had major surgery, but because of some meditation practices, and you all, people came to my house like we do, and we had meetings, and they were powerful, by the way. I have my own apartment now. I've never, ever, in my whole life lived by myself. Isn't that, I feel silly, like being tearful about that, but I never have. It was either my kids, you know, or my family when I was young, but now I live by myself. Kind of sucks most days, though, to be honest with you. It really does. I don't like living by myself. That's what I have learned. I don't really like living by myself, and that's okay, too. That's okay, too. It's all right. I'd much rather save my money and spend it on, like, traveling and going back to my new old love, and, you know, go and see music and shows and stuff. But I don't know. I guess it's and, you know, I'm up there camping last night, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm just thinking, wow. I remember coming here for the first time so many years ago, and some of the people I've talked to, and some of them aren't around anymore, and it was just, like, overwhelming it for a moment, and just, wow. If I show up at a meeting and don't take nothing, my life changes. And not only does it change, it gets good, and it gets... I lived in a shooting gallery and couldn't get off Four Corners. And really just wanted to die. I don't want to die anymore. I want to live, man. I want to live and carry this message that we have here. Because nobody has to die. Look, but just real quick. I think it was Thursday, a friend of ours overdosed and died. Because he had to get one more. His wife's struggling. She's one of us, too. And again, it was pretty close to home, so it was like, wow. Just one more. So, anyway, I'm pretty aware of that today. This moment. So, I don't have to take nothing today. My life is filled with grace and mercy. And it's only going to get better. And as women, someone said something about lifting each other up, right? And that's what we do here, and that's been my experience here. I have not had an experience, I had to think about that for a minute, where I had women in my life who tore me down. That has not been my experience. My experience has been with being with women who lift each other up, and we tell each other the hard shit sometimes. And that might seem, it's painful sometimes, but that's what we do. And thank you very much for asking me to share.
So now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Sarah S. from the Tuesday Noon Last Chance Group at NA in the WE area of NA.
I'm Sarah. I'm an addict.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, can I use your phone for time? Is this, you left, someone left their phone up here for this reason? Is this yours?
It's the recorder.
Oh, then I need to get my phone real quick. Sorry about that. Let me start over. I'm Sarah. I'm an addict.
Hi,
Sarah. I first wanted to thank Courtney for asking me to share here today. It's a privilege and an honor to be asked to do anything for Narcotics Anonymous. And everyone always says that slogan, Narcotics Anonymous has did so much for you. What are you willing to do for it? You know, and thank you to the spiritual retreat for allowing me this space here. And I also want to say, this is a women's wrap, so I want to say thank you for everyone for being here. I was looking around while Paula was sharing, and it's a beautiful lead, and I was looking around at everyone, and I was thinking, like, my sisters, I need you, and like, I was thinking of my story while she was sharing, and I need you to need me, and I need you to hold me up, and I need you to let me help you, and I need you to carry the message to me, and I don't know where I would be without the women in my support group, because they love me back to life, for real. At first, I thought it was just something cute everyone was saying, but really, like, they love me back to life. Sometimes girls celebrate in Uniontown, that's where I'm from, and I look at them, and all I can think to say when I congratulate them is that I know for sure I would be dead if they weren't in my life. I wouldn't be here. And so I don't know you all like that, but I don't need to. Thank you for being here and for being clean today. And so my clean date is February 5th, 2012, and like every time I say that, it takes like a lot out of me not to say, but it should be this date. But it should be June 21st, 2007, because this is my second time here. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time, because my first 2 years giving leads, I spent the majority of the lead talking about what should have been and what was then and what might have happened and what I'd done wrong. And, like, I'm trying to get past that today, you know. And I'm just going to say briefly, like, I got clean in 2007, and I heard this woman speak. I was in the grips of what I was about to do, and I heard this woman speak, and she said, I took a hostage, I practiced some terrorism, and I called that shit a relationship. And I was like, my story! That's mine. That's me. That is me. That's what I did. That's my 2007. And 8, and 9, and 10, and 11, you know, until we had no one else but our backs against the wall and needles in our arms. And that's my story. There's a lot of shit I could have done, but, like, it's part of my story. I didn't do it, and I'm here now, and so the bottom that I hit when I came in 2007, I had this bottom, the physical, you could see it. You could smell me coming from a mile away, dreadlocks, all types of things happening, and broken and abscessed and beaten down and couldn't hold my head up. That was the bottom. Like, I thought that was the worst bottom anyone could ever have. Like, I would look at other girls come in and think, they are nowhere near what I was. I was a hot mess. People didn't even want to sit by me. People told me they were afraid of me. And that I smelled, and then I made them want to get high, and then I triggered them, and so I would compare myself to other people and think, nowhere near what I am. And then I found out that, like, every bottom has a trap door, and you know, and when I ended up using again, I used again on August 21st of 2008, and I'll never forget it, because I had 14 months clean exactly to the day, and when I used again, I had this feeling. I even looked at the person I was using with. I said, we're effed, aren't we? Like, we're done right now, right? And she was like, yeah, we are, you know. It's over for us. And I remember the way that it felt. And looking at my life, I was a counselor in a treatment facility. I was, like, sponsoring a ton of girls. I was doing all these things. And I used. I wasn't being honest, and I used. And that bottom that I felt, that bottom that happened between 2008 and when I finally got clean again in 2012, that bottom, the spiritual emptiness that I had being separated from you, and being separated from my higher power and seeing you all happy and seeing and pretending I had what you had but I didn't, and giving leads that were nothing but lies and sitting down spiritually bankrupt after lying, sponsoring girls knowing that them picking up their 30-day tag was more clean time than I may ever have again. And that spiritual bottom was 1,000 times worse than anything I ever experienced looking dirty coming off the street. Waking up every day obsessed to use in my apartment that I had through my sobriety or my recovery was it was horrible, you know. And I just want to say it to get out of the way, because sometimes I feel like I stay clean on any given day because I'm traumatized by that, and I think about that, and like when I think about my bottom, I think about that. I think about what it felt like to have to be at work at the methadone clinic and to wake up, I was a counselor there, and to wake up every day and have to set my alarm clock on my phone 2 hours early. And I remember what it felt like, the table beside my bed, I remember what it felt like smacking against my hand as I looked for what I needed to put in my mouth to be okay in an hour to get up and go to work, you know. And like, I remember that. I just wanted to say that out loud to keep that fresh. And so I'm just going to tell you a little bit of my story real briefly. I surely didn't have a happy childhood, so I'm just going to breeze through that. I was born in this little town in upstate Pennsylvania that they had nothing but poverty and drugs. And I always say this thing just because it's cute now, but we went to a school that was so small that when I moved out of the town, I was blown away that middle school existed. I thought middle school was just the center of your school. Like, you know, because kindergarten's down here and 12th grade's up here, and the kids in middle school, they're just in the middle of the school. I didn't know that was a real thing. And so I was like real sheltered in that aspect. There wasn't a lot of, there wasn't any other ethnicities other than Caucasian in that town, and I was the only gay person that I ever known. You know, that's just my story. I was a tall, fat, little lesbian, and it didn't go over that well in that town, you know. So from the first memory I can have is feeling different. Not just feeling different, like knowing I'm different. And like there wasn't a place for me there. I didn't fit in there, and I had two drug addict parents, and I didn't fit in there. I remember going to school and you fat this and you dyke this, and it was everything. It was everything all day. It was like torturous being there, you know. And I ended up having some problems when I was an adolescent, and they put me in one of those facilities, and I wasn't allowed out of that facility until I aged out. I was there for about 4.5 years. So whenever they finally let me out, they let me into college, and I promised myself I would never go back to that town. You know, and I carried on like most of us do in an active addiction, and my main job was getting it in and doing what I needed to do to get the next one, and hurting the people that I had to hurt and doing the things to myself that I had to do. That was it, you know. And so when I finally decided to get clean, how I ended up in Uniontown, because I had never heard of Uniontown, how I ended up there was I went to rehab in 2007, and it was my 16th rehab, and they were just like, hey, we're done, you know, we're done with you. You can stay for like 72 hours, and you have to go, and we're going to send you to Uniontown. So like a good addict, my brain was, you know, reeling with all these, where's Union? Is that by State College? I had it totally confused with this other town called Unionville. So I was thinking, I have one last family member in State College. Someone who I didn't screw over yet, someone who I hadn't lived with, who hadn't ever loaned me a dime, and I'm going there. Like, that's all I could think. I agreed to come because I'm going there, and we started driving, and we passed the State College exit, and we passed every exit, and I start seeing West Virginia signs, and I was thinking, like, oh my God, they're taking me someplace to kill me. I don't know what we're doing. We've been in the car for 5 hours. I don't know what's happening, and they pulled up in another way. And I don't know if any of you have ever been to another way in Uniontown or have ever seen another way in Uniontown, but the nuns are there. It's spiritual grounds. It is a recovery place. They have nuns, period, statues of Jesus, God, everything. And I pulled up and I was like, wow, I'm going to die here. Like, I was like, I was terrified. I'm going to die here. And, you know, and I did my run there. And I want to say I had a good shot at getting and staying clean. I had a good shot, like nobody and nothing. I was 13th stepped, but I was the volunteer. I was not the victim. You know, the person that 13th stepped me, I willingly allowed that to happen. You know, I had every opportunity. And even though that had happened, I still didn't have to pick up. Like, I chose to pick up. I remember the day my first lie was told, and it was about going to a meeting. My sponsor asked me, did I go to a meeting that day? I said yes, and the answer was no. And that was my first lie that I told that started me in this downward spiral that ended up in me using again, you know. And I lived there. I continue to live there. Uniontown has beautiful recovery, and even through my last act of addiction, I stayed there, you know. And the hostage that I had ended up taking at the time, she cut me loose, thank God, because I wouldn't be clean standing here. I had a resentment against her for a long time, you know, and in December of 2011, she left me. And for a long time, I couldn't let that go. It was like, you left me. You went back to Newcastle. You left me here with the wreckage of our past to clean up. I have to do this. I have this animal. I have all this stuff, you know. And through staying clean and working some steps, I realized that she set me free. That if she wouldn't have left, I wouldn't be here, you know. So one of the last days of my last run, the day before I went to rehab, I had gone back to visit her. She had kicked me out again. It was in the end of January of 2012, and my last, one of the worst moments I can remember of using was standing on this woman's front door. She had put me out again, and I was banging on the door, and she was looking at me through the door, and I was begging her for one more, and I did not mean one more hit. I was begging her for one more hour of her time, one more night spent together, one more I love you, one more time the door opens and lets me in, one more chance, just one more. It was the most I had ever felt like a person was a drug was a person. It was the most I had ever felt, the most powerlessness I had ever felt, you know, and she wouldn't let me in, and my life changed that day. And I went home and I had this fantastic plan, like we make these plans of, I'm going to kill myself. I can't do this without her. I'm going to kill myself. And I had already had a call into rehab, and they said something ridiculous, like 11 days, which I was like, forget it. I'll be dead in 11 days, so goodbye. And I thought nothing of it. And so I had this plan of killing myself, and I had the date set. It was going to be January 29th of 2012, and I don't know why that sounded like a good day. And I went home, and a couple hours after I was home, you know, I got this telephone call from Cove Forge, and they were like, actually, someone left AMA, and we're going to come, and we're going to get you tomorrow. And that was the first time that my higher power, that I noticed my higher power working in my life for me. And they came and they picked me up, and I did my time at Cove Forge, you know. And I just want to say real quick before I go on, this morning I was talking to my sponsor who came with me, thank God, because I was just shaking the whole way here. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to speak. I have nothing but chaos in my life right now. I've been at work for 17 days straight. Pandemonium, my cat's dying, my car won't start. Just everything horrible in your life you could possibly imagine. And so I opened up my old journal, because I've been keeping a journal since I got clean. And I shuffled through the pages, and I was going to do the Bible trick where you put your finger down and see if it lands on something that you're really supposed to hear at the time. And I opened my journal, and I'm flipping through the pages, and it lands on my gratitude list. And there are no entries since February 5th of 2015. Since my anniversary of this year, nothing. And I had this overwhelming feeling of like, that's the answer. Like, that's why my life's like this right now. I haven't taken one moment to sit down and to say out loud to anyone or to write down in this book what good is going on in my life right now, what I'm grateful for. I haven't taken a moment of my time. I might have said I'm grateful for something, but I hadn't shown it in a minute, you know. So with all that being said, I thought I would come here today and talk about a couple of the things that I'm grateful for, a couple of things that happened in my recovery that I haven't said out loud in a while, you know. So I went to Cove Forge, and they had me on all the Cove Forge medications that you could be on, possibly be on, to be in rehab, and they get you all up on the medications, and they wheeled me up on this ropes course that I felt like was the top of that tree. And it's a little tiny man like this big who's holding the rope at the bottom, and me. And I'm high on rehab meds. And I was like, I can't go up in the tree. I'm going to die up there. And this is just crazy. And being dramatic like I always am, you know. And I was flipping out in rehab every single day. And we go back to the thing and we do this group. And I'm bitching and complaining at everything. And they were like, write your clean date down in the paper. We're going to wear it like a badge. That was our group. A badge. It was shaped like a badge, and you cut the badge out and you tack it here. I said, this is crazy. I don't feel clean. And I don't mean to offend anyone, please. I don't want you to call your sponsors if you're offended. I want you to talk to me after this, because I don't mean to offend or hurt anyone by saying this. But for me being like that in a rehab, I didn't feel clean. This was in January. I said, I need a clean date. I have nothing to write on my badge. I had nothing. I just felt empty. And so that's the day I made the decision to start refusing the medications that they were giving me there. And they cut me down. And my first day waking up and putting nothing in my body is February 5th of 2012. And that's how I got my clean date. And so going to CoForge, all this stuff, I get discharged. Now, when I went in, I didn't 100% think that I was going to get or stay clean. I had some drugs at my house, and I had some alcohol at my house, just a little bit. It was my reservation. I was thinking, like, just a little, just, you know, who knows what's going to happen there, just a little bit. And I had called my sister when I was there, because when I was there, I heard someone carrying the message of Narcotics Anonymous. They said to another woman, you're not going to stay clean if you do that. And I don't know what they were talking about or what context it was in, but just hearing someone say, you're not going to stay clean if you do that, it set a little spark inside of me, and it made me want to do something different. I called my sister, like, please, go into my house and get that stuff out, because I'm not going to stay clean. You know, even if I leave here and come home to that, I'm not going to stay clean. And she called back, and she said, I couldn't find it. I don't know where you hid it when you were high, but I searched the house. I ripped the house apart. I couldn't find what you were looking for. And I was like, shit, I'm going to get high. And so they're driving me home, and my driver was this big old pregnant. I mean, she looked 11 months pregnant. And she wasn't in recovery, but her husband was. And she was carrying his message the whole way home, and she was on fire for recovery. And so I opened up to her, and I told her what was in my house, and I said, please, you have to come in and get this out of my house. And she said, I'll lose my job if I come into your house. I'm not allowed to come into your house. And I said, you don't understand. I'm going to die. And she said, if I find out you told anybody about this, I'm going to come back for you after I have this baby, and I'm going to kick your ass. And I was like, okay, whatever. You know, I'm not going to tell anybody. And she went into my house, and I gave her what I had. She dumped what I had. She flushed what I had. And she said, you are free. And she walked out of my house. I don't know her name. I don't remember what she looked like other than big belly, but that was the second time that I remember my higher power working in my life for me. You are free. And so I was back in this apartment in the shambles of my past, everything, you know, and I didn't know what I was going to do, and I didn't have a sponsor yet, and I had this other hostage that was kind of living with me in and out and running all over, whatever, and I didn't know what to do, you know, and I was so ashamed to show my face, and I went and I picked up my white key tag at the group that is my home group now, and it's the last chance meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And I felt like it was called the last chance because it was my last chance. And I picked up my white tag, you know, and they surrounded me. This one woman, she took, give me your phone, and she deleted all the numbers in there. Stop texting her, you're crazy. Put the phone, changed the number. They came to my house. We cleaned my house. I didn't think I was even going to be able to clean my house. I was sending out mass text messages. Help me clean my house. Help. You know, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do anything. I felt like a brand new person that just got born coming back into life, and I did not know how to do anything, you know. And these women, they didn't just tell me how to stay clean. They told me how to live. And they didn't just tell me. They showed me. They showed up. They came over, and they showed me, you know, one by one, my higher power just started working in my life. So that journal I was telling you about, the first entry in that journal is from when I have 44 days clean. And the first line in that journal was, I am so sorry I haven't written. I haven't been able to lift a pen. I was sick up until 44 days clean. I didn't have a full night's sleep, a regular bathroom experience. I didn't have a regular meeting. I couldn't drink caffeine. I couldn't do anything. I was like a walking withdrawal. I mean, I was so sick the whole time, and my first journal entry said, I'm sorry, I couldn't even lift my pen. And my first journal entry was like how it felt like to be sick. You know, and I go back through and I read that all the time. And then so the next miracle that happened a couple months clean, I lost my driver's license, and I thought, certainly this is the end of the road for me. Because I was going to a bunch of meetings a day, 3-4 meetings, as many meetings as Uniontown had, I was in it. And I was surrounded by women, and I lost my driver's license, and my higher power was doing for me what I could not do for myself, because I was up to no good in that car. I was driving around. I was picking up people I shouldn't have been picking up. I was going here. I was going there, and my higher power swooped in, took my car. And after I got my license back, he broke my car down. So I spent the first, I just bought a car in June. So 3 years clean. I just bought my car. for that amount of time, I've been setting up rides, and there is nothing has blessed me more in this program than having to humble myself and ask you to help me. When I spent so many years being the one that everybody asked for help, nothing humbled me more for asking help. The next miracle that happened in my recovery happened recently. About a year and a half ago, I got diagnosed with hepatitis. I was listening to you share, and I was caught up in the grips of obsession with this. I mean, I was an idiot, and I had them forward all my blood work to my email. I'm Googling. I'm blood working levels. I'm doing all this, you know, doctor work on myself. I had myself in such a frenzy. You know, I didn't know. I just didn't know, and I had to share about it. I had to humble myself and share with women in the support group. So many of you understood. Like, I didn't know. I don't know why I felt so alone, but so many of you understood. Still, man, I felt different. And so for about a year, we're talking options, different treatments. What am I going to do? Hold on. There's a new medication coming out, they'd always say. There's something new happening. And so one day I was supposed to start my medication. This was in January of this year. I was supposed to start my treatments, you know, and I called in, and self-centered, self-obsessed, egotistical maniac that I am. I can't believe you haven't called me yet. All my blood work is in. I know that it's in. I'm supposed to be on treatment. This is going to mess up my summer plans. I have something I want to do this summer. I'm supposed to be on it now, so I'm not sick by summer. And they were like, hold on, you know, geez, hold on, and looked through the paperwork, and she got back on the phone, and she said, actually, the reason that we haven't called you back is because we had to send your blood work back to the lab because your viral load is zero. You don't even have hepatitis C anymore, and there's nothing we can give you to treat you because you don't have it. And of course, I'm there every month getting the blood test to make sure that they're not wrong, you know, and just a miracle. So as I carry on in my days complaining about all this thing that's gone wrong, I sometimes forget, like, where I've come from, you know. So there are also many stories in my recovery process of, because my addiction is not just drugs. Like, I heard this speaker one time, and this speaker nailed it, man. They were like, I put down the drugs, I picked up the spoon, and I ate my way into a new addiction. I put down the spoon, I picked up the credit card, and I shot myself into a new state of mind. You know, I put the credit card down, and now I'm looking good, head to toe, new gear, and I went to find myself my next hostage. Like, that's me. And Paula, when you were sharing about looking for something to fill you up, and it's a miracle we haven't used, because as addicts, we look for things to fill us up. It hit something in me, because at any given day, I'm looking for that. I mean, I got kicked out of yoga in recovery. I don't know anybody who got kicked out of yoga. Who gets put out of yoga? They said, your ego's running the mat. You're going to hurt yourself. You have to get out of here. She put me on a 2-week yoga restriction where it was like, if you can't stop trying to be the best. It was funny. That it was serious, though, man. I was hurting myself trying to be the best in the class. And it was like, if you can't stop trying to be the best, I can't have you in here. It's a liability. You're going to hurt yourself. And, you know, just one thing after the next, one thing after the next. And so relationships are my downfall. And when I had a little under a year, I was like, I have enough time. I'm going to do this thing. I was like, I waited 10 months. That's a miracle. 10 months, I haven't done anything. 10 months, I haven't been on a date. 10 months, I haven't, you know, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this right. And I went out with this girl and went to Pittsburgh, and she ended up breaking my heart, and it was tragic. And my sponsor finally was like, stop talking about her. I can't take this one more, you know, one more hour of this. This is crazy. And he only knew her for a week and all that, you know. But you know how we are as addicts. So fast forward, I celebrate my year. I have a year, about a week after my 1 year celebration, I'm minding my own. I'm in Uniontown. I'm at a meeting, and she comes crawling in. She's not from here. My higher power brought her from Pittsburgh and put her in Uniontown so I could watch her pick up her white key tag. You know, so I could feel her pick up her white key tag and of course I'm selfish. All I could think of is how it could have been me. Because usually when I'm in a relationship and someone's picking up their white key tag, I'm sitting beside them getting mine too. You know what I'm saying? And so my higher power has done these things for me. Kept me from things that I really thought I needed and wanted at the time. My higher power does not just give to me. And in fact, I'd like to make a bold statement and say he takes more than he gives to me. Because I need it taken. I'm like a child who can't let go. I saw this speaker on the topic of let go or get dragged. I was like this with a notepad. Because everything they were saying was spot on. That's my story, you know. And my higher power just got to keep me in check. And I saw this quote. I'm not going to go on and on here. I'm almost finished. I saw this quote a while back, and I think about it all the time. I got to see if I can get it right. It says, God's grace is when we get what we do not deserve in life, and His mercy is when we don't get what we do deserve. And I think about that all the time, man. Like, I got this life. I got this life, this beautiful life, you know, and against all odds, people like me, I feel like a fraud on most days. I'm like, I don't know how to buy a car. I'm getting my best outfit on and I'm sitting there like this. I don't know what to do. I'm signing papers. I'm smiling. I'm throwing money, buying warranties. I don't know what I'm doing. Get screwed over. You know, but it's God's grace. Like, I wouldn't have been able to get clean without my higher power giving me some grace and putting some willingness in my life. It's nothing that I did, you know. And my higher power is mercy. The girl that I was talking about, she's clean today, I think. You know, but just taking things from me that I do not need. I think about that all the time. So I'm going to close and say this. I don't know, like, a lot about recovery. I'm really trying to change my words from saying I only have 3 years clean. I'm not trying to say that anymore. Because 3 years clean is the sixth I've ever felt my whole life. Doing all this step work. I'm all in my head. I'm this deep in character defects. I'm writing. I never stop writing. I go over step work all the time. It never ends. So I don't know a lot about, a ton about recovery. I don't know any absolutes about recovery. There are just two that I know for sure. And I'm going to say them and I'm going to shut up. One is that no one has to use again. We don't have to use again. We don't have to die a drug addict lifestyle. We don't ever have to pick up again. Anyone holding a white key tagger up never has to put anything in their body again, and that includes myself. Never, regardless of what we do. I know that for sure. And the second thing that I know for sure, my sponsor told me. She told me my higher power did not drag me out of shark-infested water just to leave me lying on the beach. And I believe that yours didn't either. That's all I have. Thanks.